From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Good evening, everybody. And yes, this is The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. It is episode 239 on this Thursday, the 22nd of November. And we are talking all your board games, your card games, all your friendly neighbourhood games, because we are the Southern Hemisphere's biggest board gaming podcast and radio show. Because we don't know anyone in Cape Town, as far as we know, that does it better. And for the first time in a long time, all three of us are in the studio. So yes. I am joined by Mr. Garth.
Hello.
And Mr. Mark.
Here I am.
Now, I was going to put a little edit in last week's show, but I forgot, so I'm going to talk about it now. In the last week, a hero of many, many of us nerds has passed away. Young Stan Lee, 95 years young, an absolute belter of an innings. Most people would know as one of the creators and founders of Marvel Comics, Spider-Man, X-Men being the main ones, and just an inspirational figure in the sense that he was kicking goals all the way up until the end. Always a positive man, no matter what walk of life he walked into. And the last known video I saw of him today, have you seen this?
No.
Where the last video he ever filmed was this little one-minute clip we sent out, probably on Twitter or something, to his fans saying, a lot of people have noticed that I haven't been using my right hand a lot lately. It was a bit injured, but it's all right now. Just to letting everyone know that I'm okay. Thank you for your best wishes. And then he says, but my left hand has taken a turn for the worst. And he holds up a hand that's a big green Hulk. That was the last video a 95-year-old man sent out to the world. And if that's not an inspiration to all of us, I don't know what is.
Absolutely.
So, Excelsior!
Excelsior, indeed. Rest in peace, good nerdy grandfather.
That's right.
So now the torch passes to Captain Picard, I believe.
There we go.
Don't curse him like that.
Well, no, it's not a curse, because I think you'll find then he's got another good 30 years.
I hope so.
And then I believe Kevin Smith is after that. So there you go.
Wacko.
So, Garth, what are we actually doing on this show this evening?
We're doing games, games, and then some news about games, because we are going to start with a game that is all about the art and how modern that art is.
Even though it's old.
It is old. But what's old is maybe new and modern again.
Possibly.
We will then also do another what we've been playing about an easy to play, easy to teach, and incredibly difficult to explain game. So we'll see how we go with that.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark, you've got some news, have you?
Yeah, just a little bit to sort of fill in the end of a show and take us home for another week.
Well, that's fantastic. But we do have to do this quickly, because I've got a plane to catch.
Yeah.
Until tomorrow morning.
Where are you going, Garth?
I'm going to Canberra, our nation's capital, and going to play all of the new Essen releases at LFG's Essen Unplugged.
Oh.
So, look, let's get to it. You are with the Dice Men Cometh. It is Edge Radio 99.3 FM, and we will be back after this song to talk about modern art.
All right, that was some quirky little Green Day here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with Pop Rocks and Coke. I'm sure they're talking about the drink. And you're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio. As we said, we're talking about board games, card games, and tonight we're going to talk about art, particularly of the modern variety.
Because we are so damn sophisticated, aren't we?
We are absolutely are.
So let us turn to the most sophisticated of us, young Mr. Leon.
I am indeed a bona fide art cricket.
Yes.
Considering I have been to the Van Gogh Museum in Amsterdam.
Woohoo!
Indeed. It's a belt and place.
Did you go to the Louvre? In Paris?
No, because it was torrential rain when we were going past there.
Well, it is indoors.
Yeah, but we didn't trust...
Good one, Donald Trump. Oh, it rained, so I couldn't go to a museum.
We didn't trust that glass pyramid to hold. It looked very, very slippery.
Yeah, it's probably the Illuminati.
Anyway, so we are talking modern art, which is a game by Rainer Canizia, who we happen to mention every bloody week, what it seems like. And there's a reason for that, because he makes lots of games.
He sure does.
And lots of good ones. Now, this game came out all the way back in 1992. Now, Mark, what were you doing in 1992?
In 1992, you might not believe me, I was jumping out of helicopters, sliding down ropes, boarding merchant ships, wearing a uniform, actually had a 9mm pistol in a shoulder holster under my arm, shall I go on? I was being pretty gung-ho.
See, I was doing that exact same thing, but with G.I. Joes, because I was five. Oh, Garthy boy?
It was either my last year of primary school or first year of high school.
Stop! Talk about games!
Get it? Because Mark's old. Anyway, 1992, Modern Art was first released. Now, the original version of this didn't quite look as nice as the newer one. No. And they use, in this game, there's five different artists that they use. In the original version, obviously, seeing it was so long ago, there was five completely different artists. So if you still had that version back then, you could still quite happily play it now.
You just have to call it not so modern.
Not as modern art, no. There was also a version that came out in 2009, which was called Master's Gallery, which is the exact same game. Which for some reason they just thought, we'll bring that out and rename it.
Okay. I'd say, and like a newer version, I was seeing where they've used sort of like masters, if you like, you know, as in your friend Van Gogh.
Well, I believe Van Gogh painting is on the cover of
that
game.
Yeah, that's right.
Which is not a bad idea, because it's one of these games that you do just kind of need some artists, really, and you can go from there. And also, it is a part of Rainer Kenich's auction trilogy, which he did in the 90s, which is Modern Art, Medici and Ra.
Ra!
Ra, I have not played. Medici, I have. Medici is a belter.
Yes, I agree with all of what you just said.
Yeah. Lovely.
Actually, I really want to get Ra to the table. I have played the app.
Okay.
But with the app, you just don't get the feel for the auctions.
No, not the excitement.
And then, of course, because Fantasy Flight recently released it with big, chunky pieces and stuff, it's really expensive. And the original version came out such a long time ago. It's really hard to pick that up. So you've got to shell out like about $80 for the Fantasy Flight version.
Oh, well, that's the price we pay for good games, though.
Yes, it is.
Anyway, so this new version, which came out recently, is brought out by Cool Mini or Not, or CMON, if you will. The original version, or Modern Art in general, has had a ridiculous amount of publishers over the... I know that some of them are obviously European-based and some of them would be Asian-based, but it's had like 20 publishers over the years. Like, by one, things like Matago and stuff like that, so it's passed through a lot of hands, but it keeps getting released. So maybe it's a good game? Who knows? We will find out.
Ooh.
So I'm going to quickly compare this game to another one we talked about recently, which was another classic, which was Chinatown.
Yes.
And the reason I'm comparing them is because Chinatown is pure negotiation. There is a little bit of luck in that game in the sense that each round you're drawing some things from a bag and there's some cards and whatnot. So that's your kind of your luck-based. But other than that, it's negotiating with the people on the table. Whoever's the best negotiator will most likely win because the luck's not that strong.
Or they will come horribly last because everyone knows, just don't trust anything that person's saying because they won last time.
Yes.
And no one will negotiate with them.
That's right. Mark nearly won a car, but he didn't. Anyway, should have backed himself.
That's right.
Should have backed himself. Anyway, Modern Art is very similar in the sense that, as I said before, this is an auction game and there is a little bit of luck in the sense that you hand out the cards, which are these art cards at the start, and that's where the luck kind of ends because the rest of it is to do with auctions and people mathing out in their head what the best kind of deals are for themselves. So this game, very, very simple. There's a board in the middle that has the names of the five different artists in it, and I'll talk about those artists a little bit later. So everyone hands out their cards for the different player counts, your different sets of cards. We played with five players. We had eight cards each. Now, on those cards, they have a lovely painting from the different artists, and on the top, they tell you what kind of auction you're going to be using if you decide to play that card. And when you play a card, you are the auctioneer that round. There's actually a tiny little gavel cardboard token, which I am going to change out with a little squeaky toy one.
It needs to be replaced to something with either a squeak or an actual judge's sort of hammer.
Yes,
it needs a bit of a thump when the auction
continues. These guys wanted the proper wooden one, but I like the idea of a squeaky, like, little toy box type one, so that's what I'm going to get. So,
I did see a video recently that compared two other versions of Modern Art that are new. Oink Games have a version. That's obviously the Japanese company that puts out the tiny little box games, and they've crammed it in again to a tiny little box. And then I think the other one is more like the Master's Gallery because it's got your sort of your old school masterpiece art.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was by maybe a Taiwanese producer, and it had the massive wooden gavel, and it had basically the great big wooden sort of like hockey puck thing that you bang the gavel on.
Right.
What is that thing called? It's got to have a specific name.
Gavel, let me find out.
Gavel dock or something.
Gavel!
Those
the gavel dock. He used to eat Smith chips, didn't he?
those two things were about half the weight of the total game combined.
Yeah, because this game is essentially just some cards and there is some money as well. So the different kind of auctions you're going to be having. There is an open auction, which is exactly what it says. Everyone just goes, I'll give you five. I'll give you 10, 15, you keep going, until eventually everyone's had a chance to reply.
Sold for 15.
And you bang the gavel. Now, you can actually buy stuff yourself. Every time you're the auctioneer, you can buy your own type of stuff. And the beauty of that is that when you buy your own stuff, the money that you spend on it, you just put in the bank. It goes away. However, if you buy it, and say Garth was the auctioneer, and I buy something he's put up for auction, the money I spend goes straight to him.
Yes.
And I can see it now in his smug little face. That's exactly what he wants.
That's right.
But I don't want that to happen. So that's the open one, which I think is the most common one. Then there is the one offer type of auction, which is it starts with the first person on your left. They make an opening offer. Say, 5,000, and then it goes around the table. And once you make one offer, that's it. So kind of like when you're buying a house, they say lead with your best offer. That's what you got to do. Mm-hmm. Or lead with your most strategic offer, because you're not going to get another chance. And often it got around to the player just before the auctioneer, because they're always last, where someone would say 50,000. And then what would the auctioneer say? 51,000, wouldn't they?
Absolutely.
How many times did you do that to me, Garth?
Quite a few.
There was three or four, I think. Then there is hidden auction, which is a mechanic used in many, many games these days, which is where you go behind your little screen, which is where you keep your money, the only thing hidden in this game, and you grab a fistful, you put it out, and then everybody at the same time turns it over. Who's got the most? They get it.
Yes.
That's old chestnut.
And you can bid zero.
Yes.
Or you can bid everything and any number in between.
And the beauty of all these auctions is that if nobody bids anything, the auctioneer gets it for free. Which massive. Is a very rare thing, which I don't think happened once.
It did.
It only happened yes. once because it couldn't not happen.
Yes, correct.
Unfortunately.
Yes. Yes. And then, which I'm going to bring up in a second. Oh, sorry. Garth's favourite's next, which is the fixed price auction, which is where, as the auctioneer, I say 20,000. And then, kind of like the one offer one, it goes around the table clockwise. However, the first person to the left, if they say, yep, I'll take it, that's where the buck stops.
Stupid.
Yeah, that's where it ends right then and there. No one has a chance. So if you're the furthest person away from that, and that person happens to have heaps of those cards in their hand, it's going to be a rough day for you in the old auction front.
Yeah, we might talk about that.
Yeah, we might do. Then there's the double auction. So the double auction is you put down that card, and then what you need to do is play another card from that same artist set, but a different kind of auction, and then you're auctioning off both of those cards. And in that circumstance, it actually can be if you have to play one of those cards because that's all you've got, another person has to play one of those artist cards. If they don't, it goes to the next person, the next person, the next person. And if nobody has it, again, Mark could get that for free, which is what you could do late in the game. It's a good strategy for late in the game.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have worked earlier.
Well, I didn't actually expect it to happen, but as you said, if... you know, you're focused on a particular artist coming out and you really want that card to come out so it progresses the game towards the end, then maybe you don't care about someone else getting to add one of their cards or running the auction because you might then be thinking, well, I actually want to win that auction and I want to bid on those two cards.
Yeah. But how do you know what to go after and what's the point of all this?
Well, I don't know.
I will tell you because it's somewhat of a set collection type thing, which is in many a game. So what's going to happen is each round, a round will end when five paintings of one artist have been purchased collectively by the entire table. So if I say buy two of the yellow artist and then Garth buys three of the green artist, we keep going around. Eventually someone will put out for auction a fifth of one colour. And then the round ends. Then what we're going to do is we're going to look at who's got majority out on the board. So say there was...
As in which artist has, not which player.
Yes. So if you say there's majority of orange paintings out on the board, the little board you have in front of you, you put down the biggest token you have, which is a 30, which stands for $30,000. You put a token on them, second most artist, you put $20,000 on them, third most, you put $10,000. And that means that each of the paintings of those artists are worth that much this round. And they carry over into further rounds. So in the rounds after this, the orange artist in the first round scored $30,000. The second round, they didn't score anything, but the third round, they scored $20,000. All of those paintings are worth $50,000. Or, if you're the very unlucky red guy, which we will talk about, Daniel Melman, you might get nobody putting out any of your paintings throughout the entire game. and they're worth nada.
Correct. And that's, look, that's a really interesting part of this game is obviously the auction side of it is fun and having that variability is usually pretty good. But the fact that over the course of the game, almost every artist, every one of their works potentially becomes more and more and more valuable. The stakes in every auction get higher and higher and higher. And especially when someone starts playing the double auctions where it's not just you're trying to buy or win one card of that colour, you're trying to get two. If that's a very pricey colour, if an orange card is now worth $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 each, and someone's auctioning out two of those, this is going to be a crazy high auction. I think we need to have that money hidden away.
I think we saw maybe a couple of cards. The highest we might have been, you know, what, $150,000 or something like that?
Yeah, for a couple of cards. Considering in the first round, the first card sold for maybe $14,000.
Yes, that's right.
There was quite a lot of increase.
And look, this is where, you know, this is where the good doctor has made his money, Dr. Knietz, because, of course, he's a math magician by trade.
Yes.
And all his games, you know, sometimes you wouldn't think of it when you look at, say, Tigris and Euphrates or something like that. It's all about the math. It's all about the possibilities. And it's all about, you know, what would this be worth? And then if that happened, what would that be worth? And this is a game where as the rounds go on, because you're looking at, okay, what's the previous value been of those tokens? Where are the new tokens going to go? Well, if this gets a 30, and previously it's had another 30 and a 20, it could be huge. But if it gets nothing, well, it's worth nothing. But then in the next round, maybe it's going to be worth something again. And you know, you're crunching all those numbers in your head and trying to come up with a figure of, well, what is this painting therefore worth to me right now?
Yeah, but the thing is, a lot of those games where you have to do all that crunchy mathematics stuff, a lot of them are more longer games or heavier Euro types. This is not. This game is exactly what I just explained. It is, you put down a card, you auction it off, people yell at each other for a laugh, and then you move on. This is a perfect game to play, as we did, few friends around a table, beers in hand, glass of wine, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, relatively simple. You don't have to think too much if you don't want to. You've got to do a little bit of math to think, well, logistically, I'm not going to pay $100,000 for that because it's only worth $50,000. But other than that, you kind of go ahead.
Well, the good thing is you don't have to because Leon does all that for you.
Yes. And it's one thing that I'm good at me math and, I like.
Because they go, why would you pay $40,000? It's clearly worth $35,000. Oh, no, it's $50,000. I'll bid $51,000.
That is an uncanny impression.
That's one of the things I really like about this game is if it was, okay, I'm going to buy a Manuel Cavallo in round one and then I'm going to hold that until round four and try and possibly think about what could it possibly be worth, that is a very, very tricky puzzle. But because you're buying them and then at the end of the round you're selling them, for their value, you don't have to think that hard.
Yeah, and one thing we did mention, which obviously can change the game, is that if you buy, say, to Sigrid Thaler, which is the blue artist in this game, if you buy two of her paintings, but those paintings end up not being the three majority on the table at the end of that round, they're worth nothing.
Precisely zero.
You have paid for absolutely nought.
I think she's always been unappreciated, Sigrid. She has a bit of a postmodernist, neo-consumerist ambience.
Well, that sounds like someone who had all the money in the world to buy all the paintings.
Yes, not quite the same as old Daniel Melbourne, who...
I think he was a struggling artist,
wasn't he? Very much a struggling artist. And then there was Ramon Martins, who was all right. And then I think the favourite of the table, especially amongst the ladies we played with, was Rafael Silveria, who was the artist, the orange artist to the right.
And look, to beat Mark to it, the art's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
But it's because it's real bloody art. Yeah.
Well, the book itself, I've got the rule book right in front of me here, and the first three pages are how to play this game, which ain't much. There's a Rodney Smith on how to play this game, which goes for about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the book, which is about another 12 pages, is two or three pages each on the artist themselves.
Fantastic.
Which is what you want in an art game.
Absolutely. Yes. And I mean, you know, you get an education about modern art world. And when you look at all the different varieties of this game, depending on what the style of art you like, there's a version of modern art out there for you.
There is. Now, the only criticism I would have is that I spent so much time looking at the style of auction that's on the card and the artist, and actually even looking at the artist, the title of the painting, I didn't actually focus on the art as much as I wanted to. Now, that's my fault. It's not a criticism of the game. It's a criticism of me. So my advice to anyone playing it is just take a moment and look at all these beautiful pieces of art that you get to experience with your hand of, you know, eight cards or whatever, because it is something you don't get very often. You even look at games like The Gallerist, and it has truckloads of art in it and actual art that you put on little stands, but it's just not authentic, real art that looks the same as this.
Luckily, with modern art, and oh God, would it be great if this game did have a little easel or something for when you put them up.
Funny you should say that, Leon, because the two versions that I talked about earlier, the Oink version, and I don't know the other company, I'm sure it's Taiwanese, both of those games came with a little wooden easel to sit the painting on being auctioned.
Because as I was going to say, when you play a card out for the auction, that's when everybody went, oh, because it's been, say it was in my hand, none of you had seen it.
No.
So you put it out and then everyone goes, oh, and we appreciate the art and we talk about it and say we like that, we don't like that, whatever else.
You can definitely bling out your game with an easel.
But when you have it in your hand, as you said, you don't really look at it too much. But I mean, it's a game, so you kind of have to do that.
So are we going to talk about my criticisms?
We're going to get there in a second. I just want to quickly mention that how we went about with the game, because Mark won.
Yeah,
but not by a landslide. However, he bought probably about 50% of the paintings that were put out on the entire table for the entire game. He bought very aggressively quite often, whereas I came second to Mark, not that far away from him, and I bought nearly nothing, because my strategy was simply put always up the thing for auction that everybody I know wants to get the most amount of money.
Get your return.
And then basically not bid on anything unless I thought I'm absolutely going to make an easy profit on this.
Yep.
Just don't bother. Let everyone else essentially bid themselves into a stupor. And then we were not that far away, which I think is impressive for the simple fact that Mark had to put in a lot of effort and I had to do next to nothing. And also I was using my time to ramp up the bid on other people's beds because I thought, I know I could get this and I might make a couple of bucks off it, but I reckon if I bump it up a little bit more, the person next to me, they're going to want it. Yep. So they're just going to pay more and then they have less money.
And I think that, for me, that was the advantage of having pretty much the most paintings or maybe the second most paintings each round is I then had a lot of money to spend on auctions. So when those paintings came up that were a bit pricey, there wasn't a lot of competition to bid with me. Now, I don't think I ever made a stupid bid, but there certainly were times where I only might have made $1,000 or $2,000 on the painting, what I paid to what I sold it before. But that then stopped someone else from making that money and that getting that amount of money then gave me more to bid on more paintings.
Yes. Now, we started with, is it $100,000?
$100,000 you
started. And the finishing scores were about 480?
400 somethings, yeah.
So 480, 450, 40, I think. 50, something like that.
Oh, that's
so,
a pretty good return.
Yeah, it's not bad for 100,000, quadrupling your money, almost quintupling your money.
Although if you think about it, the chips going in, the 10, 20 and 30 that added up are an artificial inflation, I guess, of the price.
Yeah. So, Garth, what's wrong with the game?
So there's two things wrong with this game.
Okay.
First thing is the fixed price auction.
Yeah.
Now, I just think that's silly.
Right.
But only because of the second thing that's wrong with the game, which is that player order takes precedence in a couple of situations.
It does.
Now, I'm not so against it, except when this game is not, as you say, based on luck. The only luck is the cards that you get dealt. We had two situations, at least, where I lost cards, where the bids with myself, and it was Mark, were exactly the same.
Yep.
And it was in the blind auctions, where you just put your hand out, and you put in whatever you wanted to, you reveal it, and it's whatever the number is. Mm-hmm. In twice over the course of the game, we had that happen. But because priority goes to whoever is closest to the auction master going clockwise, both times I lost.
That is the tie break,
And that is just
such a
stupid decision.
You've got to have a tiebreaker somehow.
But as we said before, we're all playing different museums around the world, so you've got to factor in shipping costs here, Garth. That's what we're talking about. That's why the person next to them. But, well, that's a fair criticism. I agree with you. However, how would you solve this problem?
I would solve it some other way. I'm not a game designer.
Classic criticism that I think this is horrible. How can you fix it? That's not my job.
Well, you could have a secondary bid between the two people who tied. Something like that. And go on until someone is prepared to pay more. Now, that's the thing I didn't really like. The other thing I didn't like about it, which was just the auction where, what one was it? Where everyone Oh, it was the fixed price one, yes, where the person could say $50,000, and again, it goes around in player order. It's not just the first person to go, yep, I'll take it. Yeah. And I just think that's, it's too organised for an auction. Auctions are meant to be wild and a bit exciting, but there are, again, a couple of cases where just through nature of where we were sitting, it might have been you that put up the bid, Leon, sorry, the painting, and you were one, two, three, four people away from us, or me, and I knew, didn't matter what the bid was going to be, I wouldn't get it.
I was going to say, I don't think it ever made it past one person at least, yes, but I don't think it ever made it past the second person, mainly because you would look at the card, you would look at the other cards on the table, you could look at the price, and again, you could math out, and very
you
easily...
You just say whether it was worth it or
you
not.
You say math out, and a lot of people go, this game isn't for me, it's too difficult. No, this is really, really simple. You could just look at it and go, well, this is going to be worth $50,000 in, like, at the end of this round. So I will say $45,000. And the person next to me will go, I'll make $5,000. Yep,
sold.
And it's just, and as you said, is the luck of the draw. If somebody has a fistful of those cards, the person next to them, they're just benefiting.
And particularly as you get towards the end of the game, when there's a bit more of a differential between how much money people have, it's going to be a case of either this is worth so much, I can't afford it, or yep, it's absolutely worth that, I'm going to bid for it. And that, I mean, for me, that happened a number of times. Sitting next to your lovely wife, Sarah, sitting across from my lovely partner, Sarah.
Hey, you got them right this time. Hey. That's a first.
And you, Leon, you know, I guess because I, the lovely Leon.
And I was just the chop liver in the corner.
Yep.
You know, because I had a lot of money, I could make that bid where even if I only made $1,000, I was stopping the person I might have thought might have been a bit of competition for me, Garth, from even having a chance to bid on those.
Yeah.
Ooh.
So that was part of my strategy.
So that was a frustration purely because it happened multiple times.
Yeah.
Now, it must be said, and I don't think you've mentioned it, that when you do make a bid or set the price, you yourself have to be able to afford it. So you can't just put out $200,000unless you can afford it, because ultimately if no one bids, you
this
get it
for free.
This
is the only one of these auctions where if nobody bids, you get it for free.
Yeah.
You have to pay up what you say.
That's right. So look, overall, I think it's a cracker of a game. I'd happily play it again, but I would like to give it a try with at least house ruling that auction where the fixed price is just going to whoever goes, yes, I'll take it
first.
Yeah,
see, I think the problem is you just have that chaos and three people yell out, and then how, you know, what's the tiebreaker for that? The person with the loudest voice?
No.
The person who knocked their drink over?
Yes.
Not on my bloody table, it's not.
Well, it wouldn't be, because you've got those awesome little drink holders on the outside.
Damn right.
But I think that's the problem they've addressed there, is how would you solve everyone yelling at once. I think it just provides a little bit more variety, because you've got the five types of auctions, which one of them is effectively do one of the other four types of auctions.
Yeah.
If you get rid of that one, all of a sudden it's, well, you've only got three types of auctions. And the beauty of this game is all the different auctions.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just a shame that one's broken.
I'm sure between us we could probably come up with a better one than
them. Do it in reverse player
other
order.
Other than the yelling out, the...
Rainer Kanizia has been, you know, I mean, there's a fact that this game is still in print.
True.
26 years after it first came out, that's for sure.
And it's just outside the top 200 games, so it's still a classic.
And I don't think, you know, even the number of times it's been reprinted, I don't think it's been tweaked that much.
Anyway, so, we need to call it on this one. It's a great classic game of our hobby. I think everyone can agree with that. The Good Doctor and Modern Art, which has been around since 1992.
Mm.
Okay, Mark, we better go to a song and then we'll come back with something else. You with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio, 99.3 FM.
Hi, this is Ella from Ella Loves Board Games, and my favorite podcast is the Dice Men Cometh.
Well, there you go. That was the dearly departed Amy Winehouse with Love is a Losing Game. You with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio, 99.3 FM. Now, Mark.
Garth.
Are you ready?
Board game / card game / general nerdy news.
Oh, hang on. Wait, everyone else needs to know something else. What's the name of the gavel thing called?
Oh, it's called a soundboard.
What?
Sound block. It's often struck against a sound block.
I did also see it has been known as an anvil, which sort of makes sense as well.
Ah,
a hammer and an anvil.
Yeah, let's go with anvil. That's cooler. Anyway, continue, Mark.
Okay, now, we just talked about a game produced by Cool Mini or Not, or Simon. Now, Simon, this, I think it was this week, announced a big loss. Their stock price is continuing to fall as the company reported losses of $4.1 million for the nine-month period ending in September. So from obviously January to September. Now, the company blamed the losses mainly on decreasing Kickstarter revenue and increased convention expenses. Revenue fell 32.6%. It's just like the finances, isn't it? From $17.5 million in 2017 to $11.8 million in 2018. That is a huge drop. And saying primarily due to decreases in revenue from Kickstarter, including A Song of Ice and Fire, the tabletop miniatures game, which wasn't a real big hit, and Arcadia Quest Riders. Now, their profit declined as well from 47.5% to 39.8%. Was also attributed to the increase in fixed costs. I think that's really interesting. Now, what I hope is that Simon stop producing so many, I mean, they do it well, but we don't need so many of these overpriced mini fests
that are kind of just clones of games over and over.
But we've already, I think we got to the point that there's a bubble very soon that's going to kind of burst on that.
Surely we've reached peak mini.
I mean, yeah, I think after Batman, I can't imagine anything else is going to get as much as what that got again.
Well, there's certainly, you know, the games that have been coming now haven't been. But then if you look at modern art now, something I was thinking, do they have the American rights or the English rights to the Grizzle?
I think they do.
And
because there's that Armistice edition that I've been dying for.
Yes, with the minis. Funny that.
And but, I'm just actually looking because I jumped on BGG because I posted the question on the Grizzled Armistice edition BGG page saying, I've seen that it's expected to be released in November. Does anyone know if it's going to be at Essen? To which there are no actual replies from Simon Games and there's no updates. There's nothing. No one seems to know.
I think I saw somewhere that it was expected to be a very early 2019 release, although the original plan, I believe, was to have it come out for the 100th anniversary of Armistice Day, which has just passed recently on the 11th of November.
And you've got to look at Gen 7 that's coming up that we all are very interested in. However, it doesn't, like, the fact that it's the new game in the Crossroads with the, so basically like a Dead of Winter sequel kind of, but the game says it only takes like an hour to play.
Not even.
And yeah, we haven't seen that much of it really. And I could, surely a few years ago, I mean, they've taken their time considering Dead of Winter came out like 3-4 years ago. Surely 2 years ago, you basically just bring out a sci-fi Dead of Winter with the Crossroads system, put that on Kickstarter, they would have had money just thrown at them.
Well,
they've taken their time. It's a kind of a different version because of it half the time. They haven't really promoted it that much that most people probably wouldn't know that is kind of a sequel to their biggest game.
Well, I don't know if you call it a sequel, but it is the sort of the next Crossroads mechanic. But speaking of which, Leon, some exciting news in this news section. We did an interview, I personally did, in 2014 with Jonathan Gilmore, the designer of Dead of Winter. I'm about to do an interview in the next probably a couple of weeks with Colby Dausch, the head of Plaid Hat Games. And of course, one of the things I'm going to be speaking to him about is Gen 7, because we are so excited for that game. It's dice placement, would you believe?
I think you'll find, now that I remember, and speaking of Colby, the man who's designed it, I think the reason their profit is down is because they stopped doing Summoner Wars.
But hang on, you're getting confused with Plaid Hat and Simon.
Oh, that's right.
He's Simon.
I just remember the big box I got at home with Colby written on it.
Okay.
I always get those two confused.
Look, it'll be interesting to see what happens for the next financial year, I think, with Simon Games. Because, look, they do still take a hell of a lot of gamers' money out of their pockets.
Yeah.
But if their expenses are increasing, then maybe they do need to scale it back. And just,
You
could release.
I just realised that, the Dead of Winter's Plaid Hat. So just literally ignore everything I just said.
If only we knew the editor of the show.
We always do.
Yes, we are the editor. I have power.
Now, let's not put all those sour eggs in Simon's basket, because IDW Media Holdings Publishing Division also posted another big loss in their third quarter, which helps to pull overall results for the company negative again for another quarter. The publishing division showed a loss of $800,000 in the quarter, which was better than the $1.1 million loss they lost in the last quarter, but it continues a string of bad quarters. But they did, however, post a sales increase, the first for some time. Breaking down their sales, good news for us, game sales were up $166,000, while comic and graphic novel publishing was down a bit over the same amount, $173,000, with changes in digital and licensed revenues due to timing issues making the difference of the sales.
Yeah.
So IDW been putting out some good games. Let's hope that continues as well. And, you know, as we said, everything doesn't need to be a minis fest.
No, but we do need companies to be profitable.
Yes,
otherwise, games will become trickier to get.
Well, their games are profitable. They just need to focus on that instead of comic books.
That's right. Now, some news that excited me. I'm a fan, and I'm sure your boys are. You boys and your boy.
I have
my
boys.
Two boys. Let's not talk about your boys, Leon. I think we're all fans of that BBC sci-fi, I don't know if you call it sci-fi noir, but it's a very dark future series, Black Mirror.
Mm-hmm. It is possibly the best television show ever made.
Now,
I think it's amazing.
I think it's probably close to my favourite, if not my favourite episode of that was called Nosedive. Do you know about that?
You need to refresh my memory.
So it starred Bryce Dallas Howard.
Oh, yes, I do know that one where the social media flicking up and you want to get as many stars as possible.
Yeah, so, you know, everyone rates everyone instantly on social media.
On everything they do, yeah.
And your social standing is very much decided by what your rating is in social media. Well, Asmodee North America are producing Black Mirror : Nosedive, the first social board game inspired by the episode of the same name from the third season of the British Dark Future and anthology series. Now,
there better be an app with this.
I was going to say, there isn't a lot of news, but it's a light strategy card game which challenges you to create a perfect life by collecting lifestyle cards while avoiding negative ratings to your social score. And yes, Garth, it integrates with a free smartphone app, playable in about 45 minutes for 3 to 6 players. I'm really excited to see what they do with that. Looking at the pictures, doesn't look overly exciting, but, you know, it's going to depend on the app integration and how much it evokes the feeling from that episode.
I was just about to say, because one of the standouts for Black Mirror is just how it makes you as the viewer feel. Mm. You watch some of those episodes and you feel ecstatic at the end of it. You watch some of them and you just go, oh, my God.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my God, I need a drink. Yeah. And every emotion in between. And that is the captivating thing about this series. So if a game can get that kind of response in any way, shape or form, that'll be a hit.
Yeah. Have you guys seen the one, I think it was directed by Jodie Foster, where you embed a tracking chip in your child?
Yes.
But not only can you track them, you can see through their eyes and see what they're doing. That was incredible.
Yeah, well, there's many episodes about that show that could definitely be made into board games and video games as well, so hopefully they do. Because
you just make a legacy game about Black Mirror where you're creating your own one, surely.
Okay. Look,
trademark, patent pending.
More exciting board game news. We are all here huge fans of Race for the Galaxy.
Yes, most of the bits of Race for the Galaxy.
There is a new Race for the Galaxy board game entitled New Frontiers, up for release apparently in early December, converting the theme and mechanics of the award-winning Race for the Galaxy card game into a board-based format. Now, like the original game, players will try to grow and develop their own interstellar empire over a series of rounds, earning points for accomplishing certain goals. Now, in each round, every player chooses an action, surprisingly, that all players get to take, but the player making the selection receives a bonus or upgraded version of the action. To increase replayability, the game will use variable goal cards, probably similar to the tokens that came in later expansions to Race for the Galaxy with endgame golds. Now, once one of the game's 4 end conditions is reached, player with the most point wins. This game is designed by Tom Lehman, the designer of the Race for the Galaxy card game, but basically bringing it into a board-based format. Discuss.
I would love to be excited about this, but nothing is as good as the base game plus maybe one expansion. I don't like Roll for the Galaxy nearly as much as I like Race
either.
For the Galaxy.
Yeah.
I think everyone, when Roll for the Galaxy came out, everyone went, oh, this has destroyed the other game. The game is gone completely. And then a lot of people thought that. And then it just disappeared off the face of the earth. They brought out like one expansion for that and went, New.
The expansions for Race for the Galaxy are hit and miss at best, but similar to just playing a good old game of Base Seven Wonders, a great game of Race for the Galaxy, just vanilla with no expansions,
yeah,
with players who know the game and know the iconography, it's just a brilliant half an hour of gaming.
And I think after this board game comes out, I think this is the final straw. Can we have now a ban on using the word frontier in board games? Because it's kind of taken the piss by this point.
Well, it might be a Star Trek edition. Who knows?
Well, we'll see.
I think you'll find there already is.
Okay, now in what may be the biggest news, not just in gaming, but in news, Niantic Labs, have you heard of that company?
I have.
They produced a little game that you play on your phone that had people standing around in open space just everywhere in the world called Pokemon Go. Now, they have updated release plans for their location-based augmented reality mobile game called Harry Potter Wizards Unite.
Okay.
They've released a teaser video and they've got launching social media accounts for it. Now, this has been in the wind for a couple of years. It was announced in 2017, slated for release this year. It's now been pushed out a little bit into 2019. But the teaser video is a recruitment message stating that the wizarding world is at risk of exposure and asking, I don't know why I'm doing a Scottish accent.
No, nor do we.
Wizards and witches to sign up for, on their email to the Statute of Secrecy Task Force to help contain the calamity of chaotic magic leaking into the Muggle world.
Ooh. It's not going to be that secretive if there's a billion of them.
I mean, look, we all know what a huge influence Pokemon Go was with mobile devices.
Yeah.
There are still people I see at my local beach where I know there's a, what was it called? Was it a gym?
Yeah.
There's a gym on the corner of the beach and there are still people there. Every night I go there, standing there, two or three of them sort of gathered together, looking down at their phones, shuffling around, standing still for like 10
sure
or 15
it's Pokemon
minutes.
Go they're talking about?
Or they're selling crack or their bodies. I don't know, but I'm sure it's Pokemon.
I'm sure he's ass.
You know, look, for that, I mean, I guess for the first 6 months when it came out,
yeah,
was absolutely massive, was solely was responsible for probably more data overages and more flat smartphone batteries than anything else ever.
And I played it because I've got a half an hour walk every day to and from work, and I'd go over there and I'd collect my Geodudes and my Squirtles if I was lucky.
And then you play the game for a bit.
And then I stopped. So, look, this sounds potentially really, really exciting. And, look, I'm assuming, having known nothing about this, that you'd be able to choose the house that you want to be in.
Well, they are keeping it very, very
secret. A golden snitch if you want to. And, I'm cautiously optimistic about this. Because app games can be really good.
As long as it's better than the last Harry Potter app game that came out recently, which was riddled with microtransactions and made a lot of people very, very angry.
Yeah,
that was one of the amazing things about Pokemon Go was, yes, you could purchase stuff, but I know both my sons at one stage were playing it. I don't know they ever invested any money at all.
I never paid a cent.
Yeah, you go. I mean, it just had, and it had people out and about in the real world.
As one thing, quick video game aside, there's one thing that I will give to Nintendo or the people that make those Pokemon games, that they are absolutely ripe to be able to be filled with DLC and microtransactions, and because it's aimed at children especially, to get them into the gambling, your loot boxes and all that kind of stuff. And they don't do it. So they absolutely should be applauded in this day and age where video games literally put those things in there for no reason, just to take money out of people's pockets.
All right. And one last one for you, Leon.
Hello.
Yes, you. Upper Deck Entertainment, the company that I think you own about half of it, because of your love of Legendary, the Marvel card game, are releasing Legendary : Venom.
Frontier.
It's a small box expansion for the Marvel Legendary deck building game on February 13th. That's the day after my birthday. It's a new 100-card set with poisoned and venomized versions of popular heroes and villains. Of course, front and center are Venom, Carnage. They're going to face off against masterminds like Poison Thanos. Is that even a thing?
If it's in this, sure.
There you go. And keywords like excessive violence. And the great news for you, Leon.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
no
art.
Film art.
There you go.
No, I do love... Well, Carnage is in it, so I'm definitely buying it. Well, the new Ant-Man expansion comes out, I think, this week.
Yes.
So I've got to buy that as well. And then I believe the next one is there's another small X-Men one coming out soon. Ooh. As well. It just... The hits keep on coming, and I keep on buying them, yep. Except the Spider-Man one.
Spider-Man Homecoming one?
Which will never be purchased by me ever.
Anyway, that's the end of the news. We're going to take a short break and come back with a wrap-up.
Hello, everyone. Mark here with a brief history lesson about patronage. Did you know that Cesar Borgia patronised Leonardo da Vinci? We all know where that ended up. That game he made about civilization building got bastardised into Small World, a game of cuddly races cuddling up against each other in cuddly mountain caves. And Chrétien de Troyes, or Troyes as you might know him, was patronised by Marie of France. Now, I used to call her French Mary when I knew her back in the 12th century, but again, another board game that was produced with patronage. How can you support patronage these days? Well, we've got this web-based thingy on the internet called Patreon. And by giving money to the Dice Men there, you allow us to create board gaming genius by way of media content, by way of your internet radio waves into your ears. And there's more, but we need more money to do it. If you support us on Patreon, you'll get paid back 1,000 times over in the content that we create. Or just feel good that you're helping 3 poor little people in Tasmania from having a hobby. We appreciate everything you do. We love you all. Thank you so much for supporting the Dice Men on Patreon. Getting paid back does not include real money. Terms and conditions apply.
That was The Last Shadow Puppets with The Chamber. How very emo. On Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh. Now, we are going to quickly very much talk about another game that we played on the same night as Modern Art, but we didn't dig quite as much, let's just say. Garthy boy.
Yes, hello. So we are talking very quickly and very briefly about Decrypto.
A game that a lot of people are big fans of sold very well.
Notice that this is the number 4 party game of all time, according to BGG.
Wow.
Codenames, number 1. Captain Sonar, number 2. Time's Up, absolute Dice Man favourite in number 3. Decrypto, number 4, which has overtaken Resistance Avalon. Deception Murder in Hong Kong, Dixit Monikers.
2 spaces above Deception. That's just quite literally criminal.
So, what is Decrypto? That's a really good question. Decrypto is a game where a minimum of 4, but a maximum of, they say, 8. I guess you could play it with 3, it says so, but don't do it. Split up into 2 teams, where each team's going to have a code master or an encryptor, I think they call it, and then the rest of the team. Now, each team is going to have this little secret slidey thing where you put 4 cards in and your team can all see the 4 words that your team is got. 2 teams, 4 cards each.
And it uses that amazing technology, I think imported direct from the 70s.
Yes.
Of red plastic with a red writing on a card and then some blue writing. And when you look at the card, you can't read that red writing.
Just modern
Except
technology.
You can.
But you can, so that's not important. What's going to happen is the encryptor's also got this little deck of cards, which are the code cards, and on those are a series of 3 digits made up of the numbers 1, 2, 3, and 4 in some random order. It could be 2, 3, 4, or it could be 4, 3, 1, or it could be 1, 2, 3. Do you want some more examples, Leon?
Nope, you've lost
2, 1, 4. And the game is going to go in 2 halves. The first half's going to be where the code, the encryptors on either side are going to take one of their cards, look at the 3 numbers, look at the words that relate to that, and on their bit of paper, they are going to write 3 words, 1 word for each of the words that they're trying to give to their team. So their team guesses the words, but so that the other team doesn't guess the words that they're looking at.
Yeah.
And that sounds pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
But the issue is, after that's done, the people who are all on the same team as the encryptor have to guess the order. The decryptors have to guess the order. But then the other team is going to get a chance to intercept and make a guess at the order. Now, if the team that is trying to intercept guesses the order correctly, they get a token which signifies how smart and how clever they are.
Yeah.
And if you ever get two of those tokens, you win the game. Now, the other thing is the team that I'm giving clues to, I'm the encryptor, Leon, you can be the decryptor. If you ever make a mistake, Leon, and don't guess the order in the right order because of the words that I've given you, we get a bad token, and if we ever get two of those, we lose the game. So the point is that the same teams never get points for guessing the own clues. You only ever get points for guessing the other team's clues.
Yeah.
And you only ever lose points for not really working well together in a team. Now, an example of this might be that we have one of the cards and it is a pig. It just says pig. My clue can't contain the word, can't contain, you know, starts with the letter P, can't contain a word that rhymes with pig like jig. But it could say pink, or it could say
bacon.
Yes, or it could say farm animal, or it could say animal house. It could say anything that can hopefully relate to your team understanding it, but you don't want the opposing team to figure it out.
Yeah, and you can say a word anywhere up to a full sentence.
Yes, that's right. So you could say with wings and it flies, but you'll never see it. Something like that. You know, pigs don't have wings. The point is you can say whatever you want, and it starts off really easy because no team has any idea what's behind the other team's little board. But the point is this goes on and on and on and on and on for up to 8 rounds. It very rarely will get to that point because the clues start to be a bit more similar in that if you had, like we did, sort of a religious card which said altar, our clues would be shrine or Jesus or ascending or something of a religious connotation. Now, the other team is always making notes of the words that we've been using. So they start to get a picture of, oh, we've got an understanding that this word is probably something to do with religion.
Yeah,
or
you're looking for
whatever the
patterns
case
in
may
the
be.
Clues, yeah.
And part of the challenge for the clue giver or the encryptor is to try and make those words as random, as disconnected as possible, but still so that they make sense to the people on your team, while confusing the hell out of the opponents.
Or have clues that sort of lead you to think, oh, green and car, those things might relate to, I don't know, I can't think of it, but really they don't. So you're trying to lead them astray.
Absolutely.
With those clues.
So that they are constantly getting your three sort of numbers in the wrong order.
Yeah, but then if you're too clever, you have the problem of your teammates who can see what the words are, so it's much easier for them.
Sometimes.
Think, hang on, but that could apply equally to either of those two words. Oh, I'm not now sure which it is.
And this is where the heart of the game is. It's really, really simple, but explaining it is really, really tough.
Yeah.
To explaining why it's fun is even harder.
Yes.
Because this game does take at least that first round where everyone, if they haven't played it before, go, what?
Mm.
I don't get what. What are we trying to, how does it, and what's the fun?
And that's why I think code names, just because of the visual element, is so easy to explain because it's all laid out in front of you on the table. Even though it's a little bit similar because you're giving a clue and you're guessing something and everyone can see the information out on the board, the visual part of it makes it really easy to explain.
Yes, and it's also really, really fun and deserves to be at the top of the list.
Yes.
I don't think this deserves to be number 4 on the list. I certainly don't believe that it should be ahead of Resistance and Monikers and a few other games because it's a bit more hard work.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's a not, like it is a party game, but it's a hard work party game. It's not everyone gets to be stupid or gets to just get up and work together. It's
and that is the thing
tricky
about this, that people will come out of this feeling rather stupid, even if they aren't stupid at all, just because of the way
only
the game
stupid
is.
People.
But it's just, as you said, it's code names, but more complicated and not as fun, so why?
There you go. And on that note, the three of us are all pretty stupid anyway, but we do know when we have to leave the building, and it is now. So it has been episode 239 of The Dice Men Cometh. We've talked about modern art, we've talked about Decrypto, and Mark has thrown in a bit of news for good measure. But we will all see you next week, and I might tell you about Essen Unplugged, because that's where I'm going now.
Lovely.
Bye.
Booyah.
This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.